Welcome to Unfiltered and Unstoppable with Rob Rumsberg, Real Strategies for Real Advisors, a podcast that dives into what it takes to scale a thriving financial practice. Each week, we'll discuss actionable strategies, tools, and insights to keep you ahead in today's financial landscape. From innovative products and powerful marketing tactics, you'll get unfiltered truth and unstoppable strategies. Let's get started by building your unstoppable financial practice today.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Unfiltered and Unstoppable. This is where we strip away all of the fluff and get real about what it takes to build, scale, and actually enjoying running a financial advisory firm. I am Rob Rumsberg, the host, and today we're diving into one of the toughest leadership calls out there, knowing when to keep your people and also when to know when to let them go. So we're going to be talking culture, leadership, hard decisions. We're covering it all. Let's get into it today. Here's what I want to ask you. So what if I told you keeping the wrong employee could actually cost you more than losing your best one? We're going to get into that into great detail, into what that looks like here today. And today is going to be really about hard truths behind retention, because not all retention is good. And if you've ever held on to someone just because it was easier, or even worse, because they're family, this episode's 100% for you. I'm joined by someone today who helps advisors' offices go from average to elite, Caitlin Wingard. She is our director of agency development within our tactical coaching team. So we're going to be talking culture shifts, hiring smart, how to build the kind of team that actually fuels growth, right? Now in regards to Caitlin, she doesn't just talk about high performing teams, she actually builds them. So that this is awesome. She's worked hands on with advisors' offices all across the country, and trust me, she's seen it all, from teams on the verge of collapse to offices that are absolutely thriving after a culture reset. So, Caitlin, welcome to the show. I know that our audience is in for some serious gold today, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So let's just kind of start it off a little quickly here. So tell us about one big transformation that you and your team have helped an office go through recently.
Yeah, I would say one of our biggest ones that sticks out to me is very much so on this topic, where the main employee, the all-star, wasn't necessarily a good culture fit. Now, she was used to being the only employee in the firm, and as the firm grew, they hired on additional staff members. And I think she took that as an opportunity to boss people around, tell them what they were doing wrong, not what they were doing right, being hypercritical and very micromanaging on each of the employees. And it went on for probably 2 years, where the owner of the firm allowed it to happen, had several minor conversations with her, nothing about performance related, just about kind of her attitude towards the other staff members. And finally, we were at a point where all of the other staff members huddled together and said they were all going to quit if something didn't change. And so it was a very difficult conversation for us to have with the owner and main advisor of the firm. But after we talked through, here's what's going to happen. You could potentially lose 3 other employees if we don't rectify the situation. And unfortunately, we did have to help him let her go. And she was with the firm for many years, and she was very surprised and taken aback. but now they are looking to hire and backfill her role. The staff there is feeling much better about where they're at. They're coming out of their shell. They're doing more work, and they're really not skipping a beat. Yes, it stings for a little bit, but the culture and just them breathing fresh air now that she's not there has been huge for them.
It is absolutely mind-blowing to me, Caitlin, how many times I have seen that exact scenario over my years in the business. And I'll call it what it is within that individual, that office manager. It's 100% insecurity. That's exactly what it is. You know, they've been with the firm for a while, and, you know, they've helped the firm grow to the place to where that they are at. However, it's very much a control issue because of that insecurity. And they want to hold tightly to every job that they've ever created, every system they've ever created. And if one person, just a millimeter, goes outside of that, it will create an issue. And oh my God, that person's a failure. And I can't believe that you've kept them on this long and just stirring the pot. And I've also seen an individual like that create issues with purpose. Come in and be the superhero and rescue the day. Look at what I did.
Yeah.
And to me, that's one of the most frustrating situations that I've ever been in this industry. 100%, because, you know, we want to care, and we want to meet the advisor where they are. And then, unfortunately, when we've got an individual holding the firm hostage, it's very, very difficult.
And I think that their mentality backfires on them, where they're doing this because they think their job is secure and it's just job security. They'll never get rid of me because I know everything and anything, and I'm very detrimental to the firm. But at the end of the day, everybody is replaceable, and that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. So it's a big myth that needs to be busted. And that myth is, retention does not always equal success.
Agreed.
And, you know, myself personally, I even have to admit, you know, I've kept someone for way too long, and it crushed our momentum. So it's fairly obvious, but why do you think so many advisors specifically avoid making tough staffing decisions?
I think it's a few reasons. I think one, the advisor either doesn't want to have that conversation with that employee, or they just don't know how to have that conversation and go 100%. About it. They're scared. How are they going to react? What do I say if they come at me with something and I don't know how to respond to it? Will I get myself in a sticky situation from an HR perspective with what I'm going to say? And so that's where we like to coach and role play a lot of those conversations, so that the main advisor and boss of that person feels good about going into those conversations.
For sure.
And then I think the second part of that is, especially for one man shops or one woman shops, if they have to have that conversation with their only employee, they're like, I don't want to do this because that means I'm going to have all this extra work that's going to fall back on me. And I've been so far removed from those processes that I don't even know how to process any application or do the task they're supposed to do. So I might as well just suck it up and let them be the way they are and not have to worry about doing extra work.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And not only that, but I will also say this, is that in our industry, it's really interesting, more than any other industry out there, for an advisor, many times they might have just become a victim of their own success, meaning They got into this industry because they love helping clients, and they love the financial advisory world, and they're great at the sales part of it. But maybe they're not even a good business person, meaning, how do I actually run a business? How do I actually train? How do I actually discipline? How do I do all of this effectively? And then all of a sudden we got to this point of, once again, I'm a victim of my own success. Like, you know what, I'm just going to keep letting things go. I mean, because I don't even know how to have this conversation.
They will tolerate a lot in order to stay in their comfort zone.
To not disrupt, right? Yeah, to not disrupt anything, the process, the flow, the momentum, the team. And you know, And actually, I heard you say something some time ago. It's really a more like a, when we take a look at a situation like that and we need to move someone out of that firm, that's mm-hmm. really addition by subtraction, right?
Yeah.
Break that down a little bit more for us.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to you saying not all retention is good retention by, you know, by subtracting somebody that may not be a cultural fit or they're toxic to the other employees. Like you, like if you remove them from that situation, you're adding so much value to your firm that you might not even know. So you're adding in people to be able to breathe and do things the way that they would want to do. Maybe this person that was not good for the firm didn't allow the other staff members to grow and to take on additional tasks, where if that person can now be eliminated from the equation, it gives an opportunity for our other staff members or other people in the office to grow and add value to the firm where they might not have had that opportunity if that person were to stay. So a lot of great things can come from like add to the firm if we do remove things that are not right for it.
Yeah, it's like trimming the plant or weeding the garden or whatever. All of a sudden, when you've taken out that bad section of the garden, how quickly can everything flourish?
Yeah,
we have seen that time and time again in advisors' offices. Like, man, we brought on these two or three additional people, and they were just so wonderful. And what's happening here? Well, we find out that we've got a weed over here that is holding everyone back.
And typically when we do hire for additional staff for offices, and I see common retention going away, we're like, oh, we had to fire so-and-so again, or Susie up and quit. I don't know why this keeps happening to me. That's where our team goes in and kind of dissects a little bit. And we look at the common denominator. Like if we've hired these people and we know they can do the job and they've got a good mentality and a good cultural fit, why do they keep leaving? Or why do we have to eliminate these people? There is an issue inside of the firm that we have to get down to.
Yeah. So that's a great segue. So what are some signs that retention might be unhealthy in an office? You know, some of those things are overstaffed, things like that. Give us some other ideas.
When we walk into offices, when we go and shadow them, the big thing is when we walk in, I can immediately tell if there's tension within the firm. Like when we walk into the firm and people are just not talkative or there's not good vibes in the office, you can feel it right away. And you can feel it too when one individual on the team speaks and the rest just kind of make faces or they like just button up and they don't really speak. You can, the social cues are there where you're like, okay, something is off with the dynamic of this team. Like something's not going well here on that. And as we dig in and we talk with these employees, a lot of them are very much not wanting to say anything as we do one-on-ones with them. And then as we get 2 minutes into our one-on-one, everything unravels of here's what so-and-so is doing. I'm so stressed out about X, Y, and Z. It's amazing how you can immediately tell when you go in that the retention is unhealthy.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And here's the thing. You've been doing this long enough, just like I have. It is no joke, not even kidding a little bit. You can open that front door and get hit right in the face, not even having a conversation with anyone yet.
Right.
You could just like, it's almost just like the poison
out of you when you walk in. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I don't even know how to describe it. Like right when you open the door, you're like, man, okay, we've got some work to do this week while we're in here. And now let's say on the flip side of it, this is such an awesome industry to be in. What does good retention actually look like?
Yeah, I would say it's a lot of alignment with the core values of the firm. I think it's so important for an advisor to set the stage on here's the values of our firm, here's what I believe in, here's what we need to preach down to our end consumers so that they feel the same way. So I feel like getting the people in with the alignment of the values, and not even just values, but I think their personalities is a big thing. A lot of people love to hire based off of licensures or based off of experience in the industry, and they don't really think about, will they be a cultural fit? Will they align with my values? They're so good at processing apps because they've had 5 years of experience. I don't care that they have a negative attitude or they don't care about how our clients are treated. Personalities and the work ethic are two additional things that I think are very healthy for having good retention.
Yeah. Well, 100%. You know, and that's something that can't be valued when you have a strong culture like that and everyone's vibing on the same page and your employees act like owners, meaning that they want to put their best foot forward and make sure that the clients feel loved and respected. And those are, you know, once again, just priceless. So what does make top talent want to stay?
I think it comes down to two different categories. I think it's monetary and non-monetary. Obviously, sure. Everybody loves money. Everybody wants to get paid more. Everybody wants to get bonuses. But not all firms have the pocketbook available to pay for high-end talent or a lot of experience. And so non-monetarily, I feel like making sure that there are clear career and growth paths outlined for the staff members will instantly make top performers want to stay within the firm. They have to know that when they come into a job, how do I improve and how do I advance within this company? That is something that all younger generations are striving to know when they get hired is what's next for me? I know I can crush this job out, but why should I stay if there's no path? So I think whether you're a firm of 1, 2, 10, 15, how many other staff members you have to have that career path outlined, or at least letting them know as we grow and we hit this next milestone, here is what I see for your role.
Yeah. And you know, I've had the opportunity to go out to many offices with Brad, Brad Malm from your team.
Yeah.
And he asks a question that it's unbelievable to me how many times I hear an answer of, I don't. And mm-hmm. that question that Brad asks is, how do you know if you're doing a good job? Meaning he's asking the question to one of the employees and you will hear it throughout the firm. Every employee is like, I don't know. So,
or I love the response, my direct deposit hits. So yeah.
I get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get a paycheck. Yeah. That's actually right along those same lines. Really good. Yeah. And the thing is that, and you know, once again, like I said earlier, sometimes we're just a victim of our success. And maybe I never went to a leadership class and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, I was never taught leadership. And those are the things that sometimes that if leadership doesn't come to us naturally, we have to force ourselves to really learn about, especially if I really want to have a scalable firm that I really want to grow. Mm-hmm. You've got to find ways to communicate, obviously not only the ugly things, but more importantly, the great things that are happening within your firm.
1,000%. I feel like a lot of people that we hire for are owners of the firm, just like you said, Rob, they don't want to lead because they want to focus on sales. They're not good at it. And I understand that. Yeah. But I think we have to think through, if I'm expecting an outcome from these employees, I need to let them know what those expectations are. And that's where a lot of people fail, to no fault of their own. But they just don't think that way. So I think also adding in the expectations by whether it is employee metrics so that they know I need to be doing this as a baseline and then I can outperform it to continue to grow, or I know I'm not pulling my weight and that it shouldn't be a surprise to me if I'm having a performance conversation.
Yeah, you're right. And that everything that you just mentioned there, those are all signals or signs or clues to when you should realize that loyalty has maybe become a liability, right?
Yeah.
So some of the other things that we've seen in firms that are really frustrating to you and I is when an individual is really resisting us coming in the office, because they immediately know that change is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's Chad's line? He always says, change isn't always fun, but oftentimes it's profitable.
I think it's, change is uncomfortable, but it's often profitable. Yep.
There you go. That's exactly right. And so if you don't have people within your firm that aren't at least open to hearing the opportunities to becoming better and stronger as a firm? In my humble opinion, that's the first clue of we might have someone that is a liability, even though they have great loyalty.
Yeah.
Because they're just so stuck in their day-to-day that, oh, I don't care what it is. I don't want to change any of that.
Yep.
And then along those lines, they probably hoard tasks, right? They keep 100%. Everything to themselves. Because once again, like we said earlier, they want to be the hero. They want to be the one that's seen as doing everything. So let me ask you this. How do we help an advisor make these tough decisions, meaning the cut of that longtime employee? And even more importantly, how do you help them make sure that we aren't losing any momentum within the firm?
Yeah. Before we make any drastic decisions, we always look at what is your biggest fear if this person weren't to be here anymore? And we figure out what is their number one pain point? What are they most worried about? And it's typically, I don't know how to do that task, or I don't know if anyone else here knows how to do that task. So then we will coach to, great, let's get those processes in place so that if we do end up having to let this person go, or this person decides to leave if they're managed out of the firm, that we have everything in place that anyone in the firm can pick it up, including if it's a one-man show, then you, Mr. Advisor, Mrs. Advisor, can come in, look at that process and do it on your own. So I think it's just looking through what are your biggest pain points, and let's start checking those off and making sure those are done before we make any drastic decisions.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So make sure that we prep the team ahead of time if there's a full team there.
Yep.
Let's make sure that all of our procedures and processes are documented. That way we can make sure that everything's easy to hand off, right? With that being said, make sure that we cross-train like crazy. Yep.
I think that's one thing that a lot of offices fall short on is the cross-training aspect. They don't think about it like, great, this person is going to be siloed here, this person will be siloed there. When in reality, yes, you should have one main person doing something, but you should always have a backup to everything within the firm in case somebody does end up quitting or they have a baby and they don't come back from their leave. Like, we have to think through all these situations where life happens and people leave for one way or another. We have to have a backup to know how to do things.
And I will also say this. I know that everyone listening is not either possibly not currently affiliated with us, or if they are affiliated with us, not working with the tactical coaching team. If you are affiliated with us and if you are working with the tactical coaching team, lean on them.
Absolutely.
Put them to work, put all of that stuff on their plate. Trust them. It's kind of very similar to when I bring on an advisor for the first time and I introduce to them our Case Central, and I tell them all the things that Case Central could do for them. I end with all of that after showing them all the reports and everything. And I tell them, and here's the thing, that the toughest part to all of this is actually helping you to let go of all of that, because you've done all of that for so long. You wouldn't believe how I have to pry your fingers off of that casework and allow this team to do it. But once you have finally let go and let Case Central take over, you're going to say, my God, why did I not do this 3 years ago? Same exact thing with our tactical coaching team. Please utilize them, leverage them, let them go to work for you.
Yeah, we are happy to help. As we help our advisors hire and we also help them fire, that is an additional, we now step in and fill the gaps to help you feel less of a burden with losing a team member, or even it's a burden, but a lot of our advisors, when they hire, they're not good at training. They don't want to train. They don't think that they know how to do it. So that's where utilize us too. Whether you're hiring or terminating, we can step in and fill those gaps.
Yeah. So, I've got an A player on my team as an example. She's an absolute rock star. What are possibly some things that I'm overlooking with this A player to make sure she does stay around?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the more transparent we can be with our A players, the better. And what I mean by that is share with them the vision of the firm? Where do you see the future of the firm going, and maybe how they come along with that growth as well? Now, as you start sharing, okay, here's my 3-year business model, this is my goal, this is what I want to hit, they will feel like they are so much part of that bigger picture. And they're like, wow, they really trust me. They're sharing this information with me. They must really want me to grow with this firm that they're sharing this. And I will guarantee you that they will put far more work and care into that to help you succeed with that vision.
That is 100% correct. Let's go a little bit further. Okay. Let's talk about money.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I'm already paying her X amount of dollars, which is triple what she was making before.
Yeah.
You should be happy, right?
I hear this so many times, probably 4 times a week, where Caitlin, they're making so much money already. And I always go, what is the industry paying in your area? And they go, I don't know, probably 40 grand. And I'm like, okay, well, let me pull it for you. So we look and take a deep dive into the compensation analysis in the surrounding area with, you know, FSP firms. So we make sure that we're digging in and showing them, here's what it looks like. Now and then we always ask, great, from a salary perspective, this is what's common, but what benefits are you offering that person? Mm-hmm. Now, with a lot of our offices, they're smaller. They don't have to give benefits. They don't want to get into giving healthcare plans and 401ks. So I would just, we always coach to, great, if we're not giving them those bonus or giving those benefits, then how can we get creative with those benefits? Can we then give he or she a quarterly bonus based off of profits to help with paying for their own healthcare? Yeah. How can we start giving them little, you know, things along the way to entice them to keep going? And I think it's just looking at, what's your budget? Can we give them bonuses? If they know we want to hit a certain production milestone, give them part of that profit that you are getting from that to keep them going and keep them working harder. The harder they work and do things, the more time they're going to free up our advisor's plates to see more people and to close more business.
That is exactly right. Full clarity, providing them ownership, meaning within the future view of the firm, the focus of the firm. And you know, I'll say this also, one of my all-time favorite firms out of Michigan, the advisor has 8 employees, and he does so much for these employees. And he does things like, once they hit X, he's paying their car payments. Yeah. Once they hit X, they're going on a cruise to Mexico. And you would not believe it. Most of those within the firm are on a flex schedule, working from home. Most of them are only working in the office 3 days a week. And yeah. So when you first hear things like this, and if I'm a insecure, I hold on to everything really tight, that would terrify me. But when I look at this firm and the culture within the firm, I mean, each and every single one of these individuals have such ownership within the firm. Mm-hmm. I love speaking to every one of them. I love being in the office. I love being a part of that culture. So let me ask you this. So how do you protect a culture like that?
Yeah, I would say a few different things. I think, one, as you continue to grow, it's an inevitable that you'll need to hire. And so I think it's hiring the right fit for the firm and for the other team members. Now, if you've got an all-star team, all A players, we don't want to bring in a C player that may not be as positive or fit in with the rest of the crew. If we bring in somebody that's a 180 of the other personalities within the firm, we're going to disrupt that culture and that rapport that the A team has built. And it's not going to be as great bringing that in. So I think it's taking the time to hire right. A lot of people like to hire fast. I don't agree with that. We hire slow and we fire fast.
100%.
So take your time, get the right fit in for the culture, for the values, for anything that you're believing in the staff, and it will pay off.
That's great stuff. Let's finish here with a couple of quick hitters here. So, what are some of the biggest culture mistakes you see?
Biggest culture mistakes. That's a good question. I would say we've talked about them a little bit. I think that we've talked a lot about one person in the office kind of capitalizing and everything. So I'll skip that one, but that's a big one. But I think the other one is leadership not leading and not setting expectations. I think when you hire a staff member on, you automatically think, oh, great, they've got it. I figured it out on my own. They can figure it out on their own too. And they don't provide the leadership that people are wanting and needing. Everybody wants to know if they're doing a good job or if they're doing a bad job. And if you're not told, you're going to just assume that you're doing a good job and you'll get stagnant and you won't continue to grow. And you may even decrease because you know that your leader, your manager, won't correct you on it.
Yep, that's exactly right. And kind of along those same lines, it still blows my mind how many offices we've gone into. And when we ask them, what do your meetings look like? Normally they reply with, what meetings?
What meeting?
Okay. Do you hold regular trainings? Do you hold regular, hey, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing? No, we don't do any of that. So, no, I've been with Chuck and Tammy, our founder, since 2003. We have had morning meetings every morning since 2003. When people want to know how or why we are so successful and how or why we grow so quickly, I'm going to tell you it's because of those morning meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you have to have a morning meeting every day. What I am saying is you have to have one once a week. Fact, 100%. If you're not having a meeting at least once a week, you are absolutely failing. And I say that with all the confidence in the world.
I would agree with you.
Make sure that that's happening, because that's how you set expectations. That's how you're able to accomplish all these things that we've been talking about today, and making sure that we're all on the same page, right?
Yeah. And I would say even on that, whether you're meeting weekly or you're meeting for 10 minutes every morning, just to know what's big today, what did you struggle with yesterday? Or even if it's just, hey, how's everything going? You have to have some sort of meeting cadence to do check-ins and to set those expectations. But also, it shouldn't be a meeting where the main advisor is doing all of the speaking. That is the biggest thing that I see as an issue is, great, you've implemented these meetings and I'm so proud of you for doing that. However, let's let you do a little less talking and let your staff talk and tell you what's going on versus you capitalizing the meeting and saying what you want to say.
That's exactly right. Have the confidence in your team to assign out the weekly meeting or the daily meeting, however many you're going to hold. Let someone else have the responsibility of what's going to be covered today.
Yep.
So I would say that's a great change or addition if you're not already doing it. So tell us, what's one change an advisor could make this week to improve retention?
Yeah. Along with meetings, not that I want to make you have more meetings than you need to, but I think everybody needs to implement a stay interview with each of their employees. And what I mean by stay interview is you have a set of questions that you ask your existing staff members so that they can give you honest feedback about how they're feeling. And it's just things that you should be knowing so that you know if we need to change things within the firm. And so some of those questions could be, what do you look forward to the most coming into the office? What do you least look forward to every single day that you come into the office? Where do you see yourself within the firm within the next 2 years? By getting to know them, what they're liking, what they're not liking, getting that honest feedback will help you as an owner and as a manager understand where they want to be, what they're not liking, and making and taking that constructive feedback and changing it for the better to foster a better culture.
Love it. I love it. So here's the truth about everything that we've covered today. Retention's not about keeping everyone, right? It's about keeping the right ones. The ones who make you better, makes the firm better. The ones that push your mission forward. Ultimately, to help you grow without losing your sanity, right?
Yeah.
So if your growth feels stuck, or if your culture isn't what it used to be, it might not be the marketing problem, and I guarantee you it's not. It's more than likely a people problem. And the wrong fit on your team costs more than an empty seat at a seminar. And the best leaders out there know how and when to double down on talent and when to protect the culture that they've worked so hard to build. So this was a question that I learned from one of my top advisors, and it's actually helped so many of my firms. You've got to ask yourself this question, and it's a mean one. Would you rehire everyone on your team today? If that answer is no, then it's time to make some moves. Here's the thing. Reach out to me, reach out to our tactical coaching team. We would love to provide you a complimentary business health assessment. We will help you find your team's strengths, find any blind spots, and help you build a culture that's actually driving growth. And Caitlin, just want to thank you so much for your time today. So much great stuff from you today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for everybody listening, don't forget, subscribe to wherever you listen or watch. So Apple, Spotify, YouTube, got all kinds of great stuff out on LinkedIn. I share it on a daily basis for bonus content. And you can always reach out to us via the website, which is simply evolvewithgradient.com. And as always, thank you to everyone out there for being such an important part to your communities. Thank you.